Hello, everyone. Welcome to the third annual CodeCon. See, many of you have come back again, so we're doing something right. I'm going to talk a little bit about CodeCon here, because we've usually just rushed through and put people on and get the presentations up and then call it a day after 3 days. But this is a conference that Bram Cohen conceived of. Bram's back there. Wave to everybody, Bram. And Bram and I produced the first CodeCon out of, with the help of some credit cards, a lot of folly and a lot of luck. But thanks to you, we've managed to have a tech conference here that is unlike any other tech conference in the industry. We are dedicated entirely to the presentations, the code, the projects. All of our presentations, as you'll find out if you're new to CodeCon, are done by a lead developer on the project. We don't have marketing people up here. All the projects have ostensibly working demos. Often there's technical difficulties with the demos themselves, but the code works. We don't present vaporware at CodeCon. And everything here is of some amount of, has some amount of novelty or usefulness or interesting factor to it. So you're not going to see stuff that's just been rehashed and rehashed in the past. This is what we set out to do as our charter for CodeCon. Other things you'll notice about this conference that are different than others is we charge you at the door for what it costs us to put on this conference with these presentations and these speakers. You don't pay for extra swag, any other perks. We don't blow a whole lot of money on large venues and show floors. So if there are glitches, remember that no one gets paid to run this thing. We are relying on a whole lot of volunteer time from many people who I will be naming throughout the day, but without them, we wouldn't be able to pull this off. So, and last but not least, CodeCon is all about the attendees. You're with programmers. You're with people that actually care enough to come to this small conference and make it a growing and successful event. So thank you. Welcome back. I'm very excited about this year. We have a lot of really good presentations. We had an overwhelming response to our call for papers this year. We had to unfortunately reject probably about 4/5 of our submissions simply because of space. But I think what we have here is a pretty well-rounded, very interesting presentation lineup, and I'm not going to talk any longer. So without further ado, we will start off with the Mod Zero Conf presentation. Sander Tema is presenting, and are you ready, Sander?
Excuse me?
Are you ready?
I'm about as ready as I'll ever be.
Okay, then. I will get off the stage, and I will turn it over to Sander.
Okay, thanks for having me. Can everybody hear me in the back? All righty. Okay. I'm going to talk about ModZeroConf, a Apache module that I conceived for ApacheCon last year. I had a presentation at that conference about this, and I'm going to present the state of the module as it is now today. So I'm this project is my night job. During the day job, I do QA, a lot of testing on Apache web servers. I know the web server pretty well, although I ran into some stuff I hadn't seen before when developing this module. Okay, what I'm going to talk about today, I'm going to give a brief overview of ZeroConf networking. Who of you has actually heard about ZeroConf? Thank you. Okay, that's a goodly amount. Who of you hasn't heard about ZeroConf? Okay, for you, I will tell you about this technology. I'm going to briefly show some applications that use this technology and then delve into the Apache module. A bit about design, demo it if everything holds up here, and do a code walkthrough or walkthrough of parts of the code that are relevant to what I'm talking about. Okay, zero configuration networking. It's the name of an IETF, an Internet Engineering Task Force working group, and their charter is to enable zero configuration IP networking. That means, I'm reading this out, making it possible to take two laptop computers, connect them with a crossover Ethernet cable, and have them communicate usefully using IP without needing a man in a white lab coat to set it all up for you. So what we're talking about here, if you have a TCP/IP network, you know you need a DHCP server, or you need to manually enter addresses or set up some boot peak instruction. You need a name server to make sense of names, and then even if you have named all your machines, you need to know where your services are, so you need to remember where the internet is, what the IP address of the printer is, or the name of the printer is, etc. So the idea behind zero configuration networking is to take the hurt out of this entire process. They did this by making fairly small enhancement to a number of existing protocols. So it's not a totally new idea. We're still using DNS, we're still using a DHCP-like thing. We're just enhancing them a little bit. So this is also not the service location protocol, or it's, I tried to come up with more acronyms here, but I couldn't remember any. Zero configuration got started, don't know if you guys remember. Have I been doing this all this time without my slides up? Thank you. Thanks for notifying me. Okay. You thought that was it, huh? Okay, these were my slides. Okay. So the slides so far have been, I've been reading out my slides mostly. So, here we go. Thinking about it? Yes, there is a signal. Come on. Main screen turn on. You have no chance to survive, make your time. Okay. What is zero configuration networking? Well, who remembers this picture? This, all right. For those of you who don't, this is the printer chooser of an Apple Macintosh. Old, yeah, very old. Very clunky. But it kind of worked. When Apple came out with the Mac in 1984, they had a proprietary network protocol built in. That is, pretty much every vendor did that in those days. You had Apple had AppleTalk. And AppleTalk was actually really cool. AppleTalk auto-configured. So you could just plug a machine into the network, into their daisy chain serial cable thing, and later Ethernet and token ring and whatever have you. And it just auto-configured itself, it chose a network address, it published its own name, and you didn't have to intervene. It also had service browsing. That is, if you clicked on this badly formatted laser writer printer icon, it would go out on the network, search for laser writers, and display them in the pane on the right. Really convenient for people who did not need or want to know the names of their services or how to get to them without browsing for it. So when AppleTalk went out of style in the late 90s, they had to come up with something new, and they chose TCP/IP. Of course, TCP/IP was not as easy to use as AppleTalk. As I said, you needed DHCP servers and name servers, etc. So they started thinking about how to enhance this, how to make it more usable. 1999, they formed, there's people from Apple and people from Sun, and you find another, like, maybe even the IBM people on the list there, formed the IETF working group to start doing this. And they came up with three technologies that make it possible to make TCP/IP usable. One is TCP/IP auto-configuration. I'm not going to talk a lot about that today because it's not very relevant to what the Mod0Conf does. Network naming, obviously, you need to find your servers by name, and also service browsing. As I said, click on the printer, list of printer appears. So a little bit about link local addressing. Link local addressing, you might have seen that before when you plug a computer into the network and there is no DHCP server or some IOQ setting is wrong or something, it will happily configure a address in the range 169.254.x.y. That is linked local addressing. Windows has had it since Windows 98. Don't know if NT has it, but 2000 certainly does. Macs have had it since about that time. Basically, what happens is if your computer cannot find an address server, it will pick one at random. It'll send out an ARP packet containing that address for a destination, and if it gets a response back, that address is already taken. It will randomly select a new one and try again, et cetera, until it finds an unoccupied address. With this range, it's a 16-bit range. You have 64,000 addresses to choose from, give or take a few, so the chance of actually getting duplicate addresses is pretty small. It's a pretty robust technology. So what this does is it gives your machine an address. The fact that it's a link local address means there is no provision for routing. You don't know a default router. You don't know any other networks. It's totally contained to the network you happen to be on, so the hub or the switch you're connected to, the wireless access point you're connected to. Can't get past the router. That's not very useful if you want to browse the internet or something, but for locally accessing printers, accessing other machines on your network, it's very good. So a little example. Here we have a couple machines. They're as yet unnamed, but they have all picked zero configuration addresses. So the next layer is we are giving our machines a name. And without a centrally administered address name server, or without hosts file on every computer, that's a little bit complicated. What they come up with is every machine runs its own MDNS responder, its own DNS mini server, if you will, that is authoritative for its own machine name in the .local subdomain, in the .local top-level domain. So both of these machines, well, this machine in a minute, but this machine is running a MDNS responder, and it says that its own name is MonaLisa.local. That's my PowerBook right here. So hosts pretty much pick their own names. And if there are naming conflicts, like if somebody else shows up and says, oh, my host name is also MonaLisa, they'll get in a conflict, they will fight it out, and mine will probably win because I was on the network first. So when every machine gets its own name, we can start filling in this picture a little bit. We have a PC Bill up there. We have a PC Larry. We have a Mac probably owned by a guy named Steve. And we have a LaserWriter printer that came out of the box with this host name. Because HP cannot really guess what the host names on your network are going to be, so they use something default, probably with the MAC address in it, something reasonably guaranteed to be unique. You can change that by telnetting into the printer, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we have names, we have addresses, but what are these machines actually doing? That's the next step, is called DNSSD, or DNS-based service discovery, if you take the whole length of the slide and then some. DNSSD is about service publishing and browsing. A machine, a host on the network, can publish a service that is a telnet service, a web service, a print service, anything, basically anything in your etc services. It publishes that with a human-readable service name that can be made up out of any sequence of characters that you like. Any UTF-8 sequence of characters, spaces, anything. That service name shows up in your browser, in your service browser. So the user sees only those service names, and those service names can be as descriptive as you like. And this can be, MDNS can work alongside a regular DNS. It uses DNS SRV records and text records to supply additional information about the services. It uses PTR records for browsing. You can say, give me a list of the services in the domain http://tcp.local. You'll get a list of web servers from the MDNS responder. Did I tell you MDNS stands for multicast DNS? It runs on multicast. So all those hosts on the network running their own MDNS responder see all the requests that are made to the network. They can answer the requests that they feel authoritative for. They can cache the requests that come by and the answers. So they see everything happen. So if we fill in our picture that we just had, we can see that Bill is sharing files. He has a file service going. Larry's sharing his tunes, rocking out on the network, and Steve has some movies he wants to show you, and our LaserWriter printer is has a descriptive service name that actually tells you where it is. It's the LaserWriter, LaserWriter, LaserJet, closet under the stairs, Privet Bush, what, Mugglesworth, whatever. Okay, what can you use this for besides doing pictures with blocks of PCs and networks and descriptive service names? I'm harping a lot on printers. When Apple came up with this, their prime goal was to replace AppleTalk, and what AppleTalk was used for most was connecting to LaserWriter printers and all those graphic shops full of Macs and full of LaserWriters and typesetters, etc. They needed for those graphics types need a readily usable way to connect to their printers, or nothing will ever get printed. We've seen some music photo document sharing going on. Like there's a text editor that uses this, publishes its documents on the network, so you can actually hook into that and collaboratively edit a text file. Streaming music, streaming video. I don't know if streaming video has been done yet, but it will be at some point. Distributed compilation. Apple's doing this now. If you have more than one Mac on your network, you're compiling your application, you can actually farm out parts of that to different machines on the network as long as they have the C compiler installed. Network gaming is, of course, you know, if you have a LAN party, you don't want to spend a lot of time setting up your network. So a lot of games, when I was playing games on the PC, they all used IPX. So IPX just uses the MAC address of the machine for network address. You don't really have to configure it. You can just switch it on and go. To do that with TCP/IP, which is very important if you want, for instance, want to do multi-platform games, if you want to get the Linux users in there, if you want to get the Mac users on the same LAN party, until this ZeroConf technology appeared, there was not really a way to get your games on the network. So that's just a couple of applications. I got a couple screenshots here. This is your chat window. If you switch on your rendezvous chat on your Mac, you see this show up. Somebody is actually working on this plugin for game. I sent him an email a couple days ago, hey, is this demoable? I would like to show this, but he hasn't answered me. Somebody did a plugin to hook into this same iChat from Eclipse. I haven't seen that work, but it's a very cool idea. Sharing tunes, of course, that browse somebody else's music collection on the network, and you know, if there's songs that they have and you don't have, you can play them over the network. If I ever want to listen to Eminem, I know which coworker to go to because he has all of those. Sharing sites, we're going to look at that later because, of course, that's what this talk is about. Platform support, okay. Zero configuration technology appeared in macOS 10.2. It's called Rendezvous. That's Apple's marketing name for it. It's built into the platform. It's totally integrated. If you say ping to a link local address or link local name, it'll do that for you. The web browser browses sites, browses services, the printer, etc. On Linux, there are several initiatives. Nobody has actually Mandrake put it in the distribution. If there's no DHCP server, you can actually get a link local IP address on your Mandrake box. It has MDNS responder on board. So yay for them. Nobody else, as far as I know, has put it into their distributions yet, but there are a bunch of open source initiatives to do this. Windows, as I said, links link local addressing, the IP addresses that worked for a long time. Nothing else. Microsoft has not committed to this technology. Of course, they have their own NetBUI over TCP/IP and all that master browser goodness that that ensues. We'll have to see if the which way the fight goes on that platform. You can install a third-party MDNS responder. And in a minute, I'll discuss one that that's actually available on Windows. And of course, if you download iTunes for Windows, if you want to redeem your Pepsi bottle caps or something, iTunes comes with a MDNS responder. You can share music between Macs and Windows. I use this at home because we have a mixed household. So, a very full slide about ZeroConf on Linux. These slides will actually be published. They're published right now on this machine, if you can see them, if you want to browse to them, if the network is working now. They will be on the ModZeroConf website as soon after I can get them up. If you want a link local address, there are two initiatives, one of which I've tested. Actually, I'm running it right now. The other one I haven't tested yet because I just found it last night. Can you guys see this color? Okay, thanks. ZeroConf SourceForge.net has some code that's pretty old. Most of the last modified dates on the files are somewhere in 2002. But it somewhat works. It has a few quirks. It's kind of a beast to compile because you need specific versions of libpcap and lib something that I don't remember. But, you know, I got it to compile, so it can't be that hard. I haven't tried this particular one yet. It claims to not depend on any other library. It claims to be 380 lines. I haven't counted them, but that would be nice and small. You'll definitely need an MDNS responder because, of course, that's where all the publishing and browsing happens. That's where all the action is. TMDNS is from that same zeroconf.sourceforge.net site. You can find it there. It's actually it's in their published files now. It used to be only in their CVS repository, but there's been some commits to it in the last couple of weeks. Apple published their MDNS responder, the same code that's on the Mac OS. They open sourced that. Compiles on a bunch of platforms. Linux compiles cleanly. BSD, it compiles not as cleanly, but it's supposed to compile on Windows. They claim that it works on any POSIX platform. A couple SourceForge projects. ZMDNS is a wrapper around the Apple code. The problem with the Apple code is, as far as I know, there is no client library directly tied into it. So you can configure it on the command line, or you configure it using a configuration file, but you can't from an application publish services through it, unless, of course, you're on Mac OS X itself, which has all the client libraries sorted out in the core foundation framework. OpenMDNS is a project. There's no code yet, so I don't know exactly what it does. Howl we'll talk about in a minute. .local.org is a site owned by the guy who did Jabber, Jeremy Miller. Is it Jeremy Miller? Yeah. That guy did a very small MDNSD that you can actually just compile into your program. Dual license, BSD and GPL, best of both worlds. If you're running Java, there's a project, JMDNS, used to be called JRendezvous, but Apple got kind of bitchy about the trademark, the rendezvous, and you can use rendezvous, but you have to pass their test suite in order to do that. And apparently they didn't quite pass the test, so they chose to change the name. JMDNS.sourceforge.net, check it out. Okay. Let's see, where are we on time? ZeroConf and Apache. So when I started doing this, I basically wanted to write an Apache module that kind of did what Apple's own module did, without actually copying the code or getting into any IP trouble or anything like that. I wanted it to work with an external MDNS responder because I didn't want to write my own. I didn't want to embed my own. Apache 2.0 support. I've been working pretty much exclusively with Apache 2.0 for the last 2 years. So Apache 1.3 is kind of ancient history for me. And it has to be ASF licensed. That's one of my requirements from the outset. So, as I said, Apple has its own module. They didn't always have that. When this technology hit the market, they did not ship a module with Apple's personal web sharing server, which is actually Apache 1.3. So a guy named Eric Seidel wrote his own Mod Rendezvous, works with Rendezvous on the Mac, works with Apache 1.3. I don't think there's been a lot of maintenance on that module. He later went on to an internship at Apple. I think he's still there. Maybe writing that module is what got him noticed. I don't know. Guy at Apple wrote Apple's own Mod Rendezvous Apple. That's what's currently on the boxes. So it ties into Apache 1.3, publishes your web servers. That's actually what I'm using right now. So people with PowerBooks can pick up my own published services, including the slides of this presentation, through the Rendezvous submenu. On SourceForge, I've been searching SourceForge, obviously. There's a project called MDNS Mod. I don't know, not a line of code, planning stage. Don't know where that is going, but I thought I'd mention it. So I mentioned a couple of MDNS responder options, so I'd like to look a little bit closer at those and see which one is actually usable. As I mentioned, Apple does not have any client libraries to program it, and given that Apache usually runs without a lot of human intervention, we need Apache itself to publish its services. So Apple is out. ZMDNS, I haven't tried it yet, again, because I only learned of it a couple weeks ago, and my code is a little bit older than that. OpenMDNS and TMDNS are GPL licensed, so I can't really link those into my Apache module and then call the Apache module ASF licensed. So unfortunately, that's how it is. So I stumbled up on a product called Howl. Howl is published by a company that used to be called Swamp Wolf Technologies. Now they're called Porch Dog Software. I don't know what happened. They got domesticated or whatever. Anyway, porchdogsoft.com/projects. You'll pick up this this library. It's published under a modified BSD license, that is the BSD license without the advertising clause. So it's very widely usable. Version 0.9.3 just came out last week, which is after I froze ModZeroConf for this presentation. So this presentation is based on Howl 0.9.2. Runs on Linux, Windows, runs on Mac OS X. Could ask why, because Mac OS X has its own Rendezvous stuff, but that means you can port your stuff, your own application to Mac OS X without having to change your code. You can just use Howl's client library. They have, on Windows, they have a very cool plugin for Internet Explorer. So if you install that, you get this toolbar button, and click on that, you get a sidebar like the one I showed here. In Internet Explorer, that actually browses for web site services and lists them. This is very cool. If you want to play with this, I would end your running Windows. Obviously, I would check this out. So that's what I'm using for the module. We'll see some of the calls that I make to that library in a minute. First, let's look at the configuration directives for ModZeroConf. There's only two. I should say there are only two. ZeroConf on and off. The default for this is off. If you load ModZeroConf into your Apache web server, you don't say ZeroConf on in your configuration file, it does nothing. And that's actually in line with what, for instance, Apple does on their iTunes and their iChat. As long as you don't turn on the sharing, it's disabled. It's kind of a safety principle of least astonishment fallback. ZeroConf register is what does the actual work. You give it a human readable service name, which can contain any sequence of characters you like. If it contains spaces, you need to quote it in the configuration file, or Apache will get very confused. I haven't played a lot with what you can do at character level, but optionally, you give it a partial URL. What that does, we'll get into in a minute. This is all the information you need. The other information, host and port, actually comes out of the server name directive in the Apache configuration file. This is not a directive that belongs to this module. It belongs to the Apache core. But I thought I'd pull it out here because it's very important in publishing ZeroConf sites. Okay, let's see if this we can get this to work. This is my Linux machine. This will be my Linux machine in a couple seconds. Yeah, there it is. We seem to still have not quite have the wireless up yet, but fortunately, I'm running a cable between the machines. So the demo will go on even if the network doesn't. Is this large enough for the back row? It's the kind of the largest font size this terminal will do without hacking it. Okay. So the mod0conf is one source file called mod0conf.c. I built it against Apache 2048, which is the latest version of Apache currently out there. This is the Apache configuration file. This is actually the tail end of the Apache configuration file, but I pulled all the relevant directives down here. We have two listen statements. We're listening on two ports, 8080 and 8081. High port, so I can start this as non-root. The server name of the main server is myhost:8080. Actually, the host name of this machine is Eartha, as an Eartha kit. But the server name of Apache is myhost. Why this is remarkable, we'll see in a second. I'm loading a module, load module. It's a SO, is dynamically compiled. So pulling it in, switching it on. And I'm registering the main server as Apache mod0conf demo main host. I have one virtual host listening on that other port with its own server name, my virtual host, :8081. I've actually found that if I don't explicitly put the port number in the server name statement, it doesn't get picked up. I'm looking into this. It's on document root for fun and profit with some allow from all, etc. goodness. And I'm registering this as Apache mod0conf demo virtual host with a partial path of vhost.html. So if we look at the other machine, we're back. Let's get out of the presentation, go to the browser. This is Apple's own browser, Safari. This is its rendezvous menu. You need to turn this on in the preferences. Again, it's off by default. You need to turn it on if you want it. I'm currently there are two hosts on this network. The Linksys network is up, but it has like 0 out of 5, which is also because the reception of this PowerBook is not very good. However, I'm publishing two hosts right here using mod rendezvous Apple on this machine. It's not my code, but here's what happens if you request one of those. It goes to monalisa.local, which is the locally defined server name here, and this is the path I published. Nothing else right now until, let's go back here, get out of the configuration file. This terminal, I'll start at the MDNS responder. This needs to be running for this to work. I'm starting it in the foreground so we get some nice debug messages and can actually see what happens. Okay, we got two interfaces. That's actually the wired interface between the machines and the wireless interface, which doesn't work. It has a Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's probably because that wireless link is not up. Okay, let's go away from this. It'll more messages. Good stuff. Okay. Well, let's turn this on. Let's tail the error log so you can see what happens. I have lots of debug messages in this. Start it up. Server is started. Lots of UDP trouble on this side. So now let's try a command line browse for this actual service. MDNS browse. This underscore HTTP underscore TCP, something a user never has to see, because all the user sees is nicely formatted human readable service names. Every service in your Etsy services can be published through this. This is actually, you're using the service name with an underscore because you could have a host name called HTTP. You're less likely to have a host name named underscore HTTP on your network. And you use the TCP or UDP, whatever it runs. So let's browse for whatever we can find that says HTTP TCP. Lots. Let's go to the other machine and see what our user would see. Look, we have two new hosts in here. The Apache Mod0Conf demo main host. And look, thinking about it. Let's see what the browser tells us. I keep using the word browser. Keep using it for a lot more than we usually use it. So here's a small application called the Rendezvous browser. Shows what's actually going on the network. .local. We have six HTTP services. These are the ones I published myself. We have even more services now. That's because I have one blip of reception on the wireless. Apache Mod0Conf demo main host. It has, thinking about it, resolving stuff and crashing. How fun. Aha. We can't see this. Seems we lost one. Switch, because this is where the action is right now. Okay. Yeah, I'll... Okay, there we go. Yay. Thank you. And the main host is an unconfigured Apache server. Virtual host is, this is a virtual host. Okay, what just happened, I took the whole wireless thing out of the loop. It was resolving to an IP address it couldn't reach. So I just basically popped out the card and shut down the responder, shut down Apache, started the responder, started Apache. So now we only have, we're working over this link here, over the wire. And those are addresses that we can resolve and reach, and everything is happy. So we're not quite there yet technology-wise, because in an ideal world, it would have sorted this out for itself. But if we have, if the network, the wireless network is working, and or the wired network is working, it should actually be fairly transparent what interface it picks. Let's see if we can get that rendezvous browser to not crash. Okay, bunch of services on the network. We have the Mod0 compiler. We have the main host. Let's look at the main host. Check this out. Is this gray stuff visible? Okay, we have a host name called myhost.local, which sits at 169.254.70.19, a randomly picked address, port 8080, and that's the address that ZCIP picked for the wire on the Linux machine here. The virtual host is, host name is myvirtualhost.local, 169.254.70.19, same address, different host. Okay, why is that host name important? You guys familiar with virtual hosting? All right. Name-based virtual host is what we all use today, so the browser has to send a host name. You can't just resolve to an IP address, because if the browser sends that IP address, it gets the default virtual host of the machine, which is almost never what you want. So we need to resolve the host name that Apache thinks it needs to use. Now, you can always set a server name in Apache, in the configuration file. The comments in the default configuration file actually warn that, oh, this has to be DNS resolvable as well, and basically leaves the onus on the system administrator to actually enter that name into the DNS with a CNAME record or something so that it resolves to the right IP address and browsers are happy. With Mod0conf and an MDNS responder, we do this automatically. Okay. So my Q&A is supposed to start. So I'm going to spend 5 minutes on the code itself. Okay. We have. Excuse me?
You're supposed to have
some OK. Quick overview of how the module is built. It's a dynamically linked Apache module, talks to an external responder, and the big thing about this, we get callbacks from the MDNS responder. We publish a service name, the human readable service name that we saw in those menus, port host name, partial URI, so you land on the right page. Hostname IP, if that's different from the machine hostname and IP. We publish that too, so name-based virtual host work. And we publish a callback function to the library, so if there are naming conflicts that we lose, if there's a hostname conflict, then we need to make up another hostname. We can do that on the fly. At least that's the theory. None of that code is actually in there yet. Actually, the callbacks now print out if they receive a message, they print something to the error log, nothing else. For the callback, we fork a process from the Apache parent, because we can't really block the parent to wait for callbacks. That would never get the web server started. Callbacks are important. Network can be very dynamic. If I flip this laptop shut and bring it to my office, it could be that somebody has set up a web server with exactly the same name. Not likely, but it could be. We need to guard against that. That's why we have those callbacks. Okay. This is config check. Are we on? Are we off? Set up a text record if our partial path is set, which was the case for the virtual host, but not for the main host in our example. This is where we actually do the publishing. Tell the library what it needs to know. A pointer to a function that does the callback. Get a ID back that we stash in an Apache process pool for later use. If we ever need to unpublish that host, we need to call it by this ID. Fork a callback process that runs the functions SW, and assume that means swamp wolf rendezvous run. That never returns. That waits for the callbacks. Okay, a bunch of things I'd like to do about this, but what I'd really like to do is take your questions. Yes? That's much better.
I know that IPv6 does zero comp for the callbacks really well, or for the IP layer really well.
Yep.
Do you know if there's been any MDNS work for IPv6?
MDNS is supposed to work over both IPv4 and IPv6. The question is, does MDNS exist for IPv6? Yes, it does. If we look at the Apple implementation, yes, it does. There's a little bit of a disconnect between Howell and the Apple implementation, though, because Howell doesn't do it. So what we've been seeing right now is IPv4 only. But if you browse the MDNS, browse a virtual host published by a Mac, you'll actually see that it resolves to its link local IPv6 address as well. Any more questions? In the back?
Repeat the question.
When you join a new wireless network and a new network interface appears in your system, does Apache start listening on that? Is that part of what mod0conf does for it? Now, how does it find out what address to bind to?
That is supposed to be what mod0conf does. I don't know if we've just seen that the Linux side of things are not very robust here, because basically, I had to control C a bunch of processes and start them back up again. With the, our wireless interface just went away. So I don't think that is actually taken care of to the extent that it has been on the Apple platform. And so that, you know, it's kind of edge cases, and maybe that's why Macs are so expensive.
We have time for two more questions.
Okay, please wait for the mic. You had a question up here.
So once the registration occurs for a particular host, and then a new client host comes on the network, how does it discover the services that have been previously published?
Zeroconf is pretty It's not very aggressive when it discovers services. Basically, what happens when a host appears on the network, it will announce, send one announce packet. After it does its address negotiation, which involves an ARP request, or maybe more if the address is taken, it says, this is my host name, hi. And of course, if the host name is already taken, there's a fight and somebody loses. It doesn't actively browse for services until a user initiates a browse. For instance, I click on that menu in my Safari web browser. It does a browse, and the menu pops open, and I have a list of my services. That little browser application that crashed actually updates dynamically when services appear and go away. is actually see events arrive. Also, the browser on the Linux side if I had let it up, you could see sites pop in and out as the wireless network came up and went down. So it is supposed to work very dynamically. Hosts can go away, come and go away at any time. But actual browsing happens only when the user wants it to.
So then when you browse,
yep.
Then the client must... So when you browse, then the client must send out a request to every other host that's on the local network at that point.
Uses multicast. So one packet goes to all hosts on the network, is seen by all hosts on the network. So in effect, yes, it does send a packet to all hosts, but it's only one packet because everybody sees it. And that's a regular DNS request. Only thing is it goes over multicast, it listens on a different port, listens on 5353, but otherwise it's a regular DNS request. Last question up here. Wait for the mic.
If AppleTalk was having this sort of thing mostly work back in 84, why switch? What was the technical benefit?
Well, a lot of people switched away from AppleTalk at the time when they switched away from Max. AppleTalk had performance problems. It had configuration problems. It was limited to 255 local addresses, so after 255, you needed a router. It sent lifebeat packets every 30 seconds, so it was more chatty than TCP/IP typically is. Etc. So a lot of network administrators really did not like it. Also, we live in a cross-platform world, and Apple currently knows that pretty well. So when they started thinking about a new network technology to replace AppleTalk, they figured something out that can be used by everybody. That's, of course, I don't work for or speak for Apple, but that's kind of what I see happen here.
Thank you.
Thank you.